All right, and we're back.
Good morning. Are we back?
We are indeed recording.
Awesome. This is part two of the legendary, the New York sessions.
Yep, this is indeed the New York sessions, the New York hotel sessions, the Chinatown sessions. So before this, we were talking about the main focus of the conversation was how somebody who is predominantly service-oriented can make their needs and wants clear, mm-hmm. When they're negotiating or offering up their service to someone else.
Right. And where people who desire service can make it clear that that's what they want, that they are looking for a servant. So the idea of servant, which you know we have now boiled down.
Yeah.
Yay, JP.
Whoop.
As an identity separate from and or to be layered together with other types of identity, because servant does not necessarily apply solely to, and it certainly doesn't, to bottom. It's outside of top bottom master servant.
Being a servant exists outside of sort of a status up, status down mm-hmm. relationship structure. Servant can be, servant can fall anywhere. One can be a
dominate and a servant.
A dominate.
Or a servate.
A servate. A domvent.
A servile.
No.
I'm a servile.
That's some good languaging right there.
Is that
so,
a word?
Languaging?
Is that a word?
Maybe. We can just say that it is, much all like right. all the other words that I continue to make up. Because I'm good at the talkinating. So it is possible for somebody to be, say, a dominant servant. That the form that their service wants to take is what would commonly be designated as a dominant form,
mm-hmm.
or a masochistic form, or a top form. So you have sort of the form and the application, maybe to a certain degree, and service in that sense is the application of right. any different particular form. So, but I think one of the things that we didn't actually really talk about so much was, which is sort of the core of your friend's question, is how does one actually express that?
Right.
Because the trick isn't just a thing of saying, well, I am a dominant servant. Because it's language, or because the idea of being a dominant servant isn't, to use that as one example,
mm-hmm.
isn't necessarily a form or a path, if you want to use that kind of a terminology, that people are automatically going to be aware of to any sort of degree at all.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly narrow band of folks who've been exposed to that concept.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, Skip Chasey was the only person I've seen talk about it specifically. I think that there is a culture of that among religious sects, right? There's that kind of idea in religiousness, but I don't think that we have that in our community, and I think it would be great to expand and have that be something that people can talk about, right? What's brilliant about this is that it's new and people don't know what it means, and so you automatically have to talk about it. So perhaps one of the first things that facilitates that degree of negotiation is the fact you have to explain what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? There's less room for assumption there. If I meet someone and they ask me, are you a dominant or submissive? And if I say, well, I'm submissive, they already have some idea in their head of what that means to them. They have no idea what it means to me. They don't know about my history with the word.
Yeah.
So they're probably less likely to delve into, well, what does that mean to you? I encourage people to ask those questions of themselves and of other people. I'm like, always ask.
Yeah.
And then ask again, and then talk about it a week later, especially when you're playing or interacting with someone new.
Totally.
What's cool about this is that you have to, because if you say to someone, hey, you're top, bottom, service, they go, well, I'm a servant. Like, what is that? Whoa, whoa. I love the fact that it would catch people up short and would automatically facilitate them saying, wait a second, what does that mean?
Yes. Although I feel like if one was to self-identify as a servant, mm-hmm. because of the difficulty of language, because of the limited nature of language, servant mm-hmm. is too closely related to serve, to the word serve, to, I think, not be automatically, erroneously associated with a status down position. To not be automatically associated with somebody who would consider themselves to be a bottom, a masochist, or a submissive.
True. I think you would have to work against that. I think that's true for all titles, though, right? Of course, I'm always in some fucking process. But I'm in a process of deciding whether or not I'm going to identify as submissive anymore. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not sure that submission is central to my thing. You know? Ownership definitely mm-hmm. is the master-slave dynamic, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. However, I feel like when I identify myself as submissive, I am doing a disservice to people who might be interacting with me. Because I don't... Submission is not at the top of my thing in terms of my identity. So I feel like by pulling down those barriers, that language... It's a barrier and it's also, you know, facilitator, right? I feel like, yes, there is an assumption that people might make if they hear the word service or servant, that there is an assumption of a lower status. Is lower status what I mean?
Not really. It's like, there's a difference between low status and...
I think I do mean lower status. I think we are a lower status. I think that slaves and submissives and servants and bottoms are lower status people in our community than the dominants and the tops.
Okay.
I do believe that to be true. My problem with that is I might be fine with having a lower status in my relationship. I absolutely rebel against the notion that in among the kink confederacy that I have to then be less than.
Yes, and I think that's why I was using the term status down, yeah. not low status. And
right.
I'm remembering that this is from a post that was written by Andrea Zanin uh-huh. quite a while ago. In terms of identifying in a relationship,
right.
the ways in which energy flows, the ways in which energy and status flows based mm-hmm. on based on how the support is given, or based on how energy is pushed.
I think I read that too. And remind me, so I do a thing. We should link to that because it's a really good post. Because she's so smart,
so smart.
Also, you know what reminded me of, and this is super interesting because status, as it happens in theater, does not necessarily have to do with anything except the power that person has in the story at that moment, mm-hmm. right? Someone could be the star of the show and yet be status down because in that moment the focus is on someone else.
Yeah.
Because they are telling a piece of the story at that time.
And that's why I think the language of status up, status down makes more sense
sure.
than high status, low status. Because I think that you can have... I imagine mm. that there are plenty of people who would identify as IR dominate who are low status people. From a yes. community standpoint.
Sure. Yeah.
And the same thing in reverse.
This feeds into the idea, for example, that dominance and tops and those sorts of folks have to be, you know, better, louder, faster, stronger, bigger than the people that they own, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is frustrating. To me on a personal level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason why I've been sort of like, I don't even want to call myself a submissive anymore. It's a little bit of a whiny bitch thing, but it's like, you know what? I'm tired of it. I'm tired of you assuming that because I'm a submissive, you know, there's that shrinking. Like, I feel it. I feel it when I talk to people. I see it on people's faces. I see it mm-hmm. in the way we're treated in mm-hmm. general in social settings, you know? And I like the idea of making people stop and think, and I think that servant would do that. And you're right, if someone identified as a dominant person or a top person or a boss and also identified as a servant in that way, that would take a lot of explaining to the average person. I think that most people would sort of be like, whoa, what?
It would necessitate it, because mm-hmm. what you're doing is you're presenting yourself as a contradiction. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing that you can, the person who you would be speaking to wouldn't be able to coast on their own, they wouldn't be able to coast on their own thoughts or history or interpretation, because what you are presenting them with sounds wrong. Mm-hmm. Like if you just say servant, it's easier for people to say, oh, you want to serve, and fill in the blanks of what that means for them in that moment. But if you were to say, I'm a servant sadist, mm-hmm. like it's a bit of a brain wrinkler. Like, right. Because there's that moment of,
Well, let us understand that service top was not a thing you started hearing until the late 90s, right? Like, when I first heard that, I had the same reaction. I was like, wait, service top?
Okay, because this is one of those terms that gets thrown around often enough. How would you define a service top?
As far as I'm concerned, a service top is a person for whom the administering of whatever sensations are happening are first and foremost at the discretion of and for the pleasure of the person receiving, right? Okay. So that the service top might not really be into caning, mm-hmm. but they have a partner, a friend, whatever, bottom, mm-hmm. who really loves caning. Mm-hmm. And they have the capacity to competently deliver this particular sensation.
Okay.
So as a service, in the same way that a massage is a service, they are providing the sensation to this other person.
Okay.
And they might not get any sort of sexual, psychosexual charge from it, but they feel good because they helped out a friend. And the other person's blissed out and they're cruising on endorphins and isn't that great. So that to me is what a service top would be doing. Right?
So sort of, some of the language you used there that stuck out to me was, it's like, stepping up to help somebody out, even mm-hmm. though it doesn't necessarily mean a whole bunch to you,
right?
You're able to do something, mm-hmm. so you'll do it,
right?
But it doesn't feed you in the way that it might if you were, what, like a non-service top? It's not really an opposite, is there?
I think that the idea of topping comes with its own assumption that you're doing it because it is exactly the core of what you want to do. It's part of your fetish. It's part of your thing. It turns you on. It gets your juices flowing. It's erotic for you.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's the point of why people do topping, right? It turns them on. A service top might not be standing there with their genitals on fire, but they're still having an enjoyable time because they're providing a service for someone that they have to care to some extent about. You know, even if it's just a sort of friendly, we know each other from conventions kind of thing.
It's interesting because that sets up the convention that if I'm a top, but I'm not a service, but I don't think of myself as being a service top, mm-hmm. then it doesn't matter who I'm topping.
Yes.
So that's personally, I find that problematic. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that means that I'm more of a service top in certain ways than, or that I might be considered more of a service top because I'm not interested in swinging a cane on someone isn't enough.
Right, but there are people for whom it is.
Okay.
And I think that that term, without any other qualifiers or any other little hooks and caveats, works for those folks. For people for whom the rope is the be-all and end-all, and they enjoy the puzzle of meeting a new piece of meat and tying it up effectively, not doing any damage, and untying it is the heart of their night. And that's topping in its just straightforward form.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's just topping a body.
Correct.
It's not topping a person.
I don't feel like topping needs to be emotionally connected by definition.
Okay. It's and the same thing with bottoming.
Correct. If I am a spanking fetishist mm-hmm. and what turns me on is the sensation of a hand hitting my ass, mm-hmm. As long as the person doing it is competent to administer that sensation, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if I don't like them. It doesn't matter if we don't have any emotional connection. Because what I need is a sensation, and that's the core of my night.
Okay. Do you feel that the same thing can apply to sadism?
Yes.
Do you feel the
in
same?
In its pure form, absolutely. It kind of has to, right?
Okay. Do you think that the same thing can apply to dominance?
I do not. I feel like at that point, who the person is dominating is very important. I feel like there has to be an emotional compatibility. Mm-hmm. Because we are now talking about brain stuff.
Yes.
If, for example, someone is dominating me or attempting to do so, and they are as dumb as a box of wet hair, I am not going to enjoy that. That interaction will not occur.
I was going to say, it wouldn't even work.
No. Yeah. It would not. There would be no nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas if someone is dumb as a box of wet hair or an asshole, but can pull the wings off of a fly with a 20-foot bullwhip, mm-hmm. I absolutely might bottom to them because they have a competency and because I'm curious about that sensation. You know?
Yeah.
What would it be like to have someone with a 20-foot bullwhip with that level of skill write the 23rd Psalm on my back with their bullwhip? That'd
right,
be cool.
Right, right.
Doesn't matter. I don't like them because I know that I'm safe physically.
So it becomes experiential, not necessarily personal.
Right. And I think that topping and bottoming can be that. It's not exclusive. It can be very profound and very connected.
Yeah.
But I don't think I don't think that you have that as, I don't think it's the center of what topping and bottoming is.
And just so we can be clear on our terminology, are you equating topping with sadism?
No.
Okay.
It is the, topping and bottoming to me is the administering of a sensation. It might be extreme mm-hmm. or not. Sadism and masochism to me involves very intense sensation. The point is that the intensity of the sensation is such that there is pain, right? The sadist needs for there to be pain in order for them to achieve the sexual satisfaction that comes from that. And same with the masochist in receiving the pain. The top and the bottom could be something like, you know, tickling or rope.
Right.
It doesn't, there's no implication that there's that there is, of the degree of sensation. Where sadism and masochism has a definite, by definition, degree of intensity.
Right. Okay. All right. I get that. I get your terminology then, and so that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that if we can separate it between the experiential and the personal, that sets up the servant to be able to have more of a conversation.
Right.
Because then the servant is able to say, this is entirely not personal, this is entirely experiential.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that I'm taking your drink order.
Right.
It matters that I'm taking a drink order.
Right. For example, I know of the handful of people I know who are servant-oriented, and this is what's funny, is that part of the weirdness that they've experienced is that sometimes they are servants to people who other people see as dangerous, problematic, fucked up, you know, but part of what attracts them is that those people need help. And what they want to do is help, and they can offer this assistance, right? And if that person is, for example, deeply selfish and kind of a jerk, but they have room in their life for this person to provide this service. And the person's like, you have beautiful wooden floors. I love polishing wooden floors. It doesn't matter if that person is an unsafe player and or emotionally unavailable. They have wooden floors that need waxing. And this person can do that thing that they love and be done. And that's the extent of it.
The servant-oriented person can do the thing that the servant-oriented person loves and be done with it for them.
Correct.
And the person, no, there's not even, well, okay, what I was going to say was, there's not even a person who is on the receiving end of that service. But that's not always going to be entirely true, right? You could have somebody who is a servant who really enjoys shaving faces.
Right, but the thing is that they're shaving a face. They're about the action.
Yes.
And the result.
Yes.
Right? one of the reasons that, that my friend provided for why she dug providing this other service was because it was finite. In her own life, she's, if things feel like there's always this other thing to do. And if you're in a 24/7 MS mm-hmm. relationship, it's ongoing, it's always happening, you know, mm-hmm. there's always. She loves the idea of walking in, getting shit done, and walking out. Bang, booyah, I'm fucking finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally got that because I've had those jobs. I've had those jobs where every day it's time to make the donuts, right? Versus project-oriented work where you're like, launch, go, little ship, go, woo!
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a sense of completion.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of completion, I think, is another component to what people who enjoy being a servant dig, because it's a task. And I have completed it, and I did it well. And I don't mm-hmm. have to come back next week and do it again. And I don't have to worry about the emotional ramifications mm-hmm. of the task. I just did it, and now I'm done. So there's a cleanness to it, you know?
And some of that cleanness has to... Some of that cleanness must be based on the lack of emotional engagement.
Yes. Yeah.
That you're not doing something... Even to use the shaving example, you're not doing something for a person. You're doing something for a face.
Mm-hmm. These whiskers are clean.
Right.
And now you're finished.
So it's... I mean, it's sort of project-oriented
mm-hmm.
in a repetitive way. It's a little bit habitual, or it could be. It's a little bit objectifying.
Sure. Yeah.
Which could occur from a dominant perspective or a submissive perspective.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I've heard people, for example, you know, get sort of frustrated when they, as tops,
mm-hmm.
for example, have a skill in a particular thing, and then you've heard the term, like, I don't want to be the life support system for a whip. I don't want to be the life support system for a pile of rope.
Yeah.
You know? But there are people who do like being the life support system for a whip or a pile of rope, and or see the benefit to being able to go in, do a great scene, drop the mic, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And be done with it. There's a benefit to that.
Yeah.
And the problem, I think, comes with, and this is why I would so advocate for dominance and tops and people who identify along those lines in general mm-hmm. as part of their makeup, being really clear if that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because where you get a lot of people who are sort of slammed with a shitty top label is just because there's mismatched expectations, right? If I do a really intense scene with someone, I learned because I did a really intense scene with someone and then had no distinct plan for what was going to happen afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't reconnect. I felt shitty. I was like, well, I didn't ask for it, so my bad.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my ethic, right? Other mm-hmm. people's ethic is, why aren't you giving me aftercare?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you wrapping me in blankets? Why haven't you called me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't say you needed that. Well, you're supposed to do it. Well, you know... Mm. Or tops who need the bottom to reconnect to them.
Yeah.
And to be like, you're okay, I know you're not an evil person. Meow, meow.
Yeah.
And the bottom's like, woo, that was great, see ya, and bounces. And they're standing there feeling like, oh, well, hmm. So the objectification runs on both sides of those, all over those streets. And so my thinking for people who are newer or who have not hit that wall yet
mm-hmm.
is that this is a great tool to make sure that you are being absolutely as clear as you possibly can.
Yes.
In your negotiations for relationships, for scenes, for interactions, whatever it is, to say, this is what I'm looking for. I think it looks like this.
Yeah, and that's actually really good language to use, because then what you're saying is, this is what I'm looking for. I think it looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure. I can tell you some things that I am 100% sure about.
Right.
I can tell you some things that I may be 50% sure about. I can tell you the things that I'm prepared to have possibly shift and change a little bit as we go along, mm-hmm. but the recognition or the acceptance or the acknowledgement of, I don't necessarily have everything figured out, but I'm closer than maybe I used to be.
Right.
That only functions if people are prepared to shed the ideas of things that they should be doing. Like, one of the, I would hazard a guess. Mm. I feel very confident in saying that one of the main tenets of what it is that we do is that we try to engage with each other as people. We try mm-hmm. to take care of each other as people, whatever that looks like, right. But we try to acknowledge that we are engaging with other people.
Hopefully.
Exactly. Hopefully. I'm saying that is one of the tenets. It's not necessarily
yes.
actually maintained.
Correct.
It's right. It's yes. not actually nope, apply or like
you were absolutely put into practice. Clear.
So that being said, we're taught that we should be, I think, we're taught that there is the expectation mm-hmm. that we will check in. We're taught that there is mm-hmm. the expectation that we will always think about the person with whom we are engaging,
yeah.
not the form that we are choosing to engage with. And that could make servant action mm-hmm. potentially problematic if it looks like you're doing something that doesn't take into account the person that you're doing it for or to.
Right. I will say, though, that people who identify as fetishists are closer, are a step away from the interpersonal thing, right? Because yeah. their focus is the act or the yep, the object.
Totally.
So those folks are more accustomed to that kind of interaction. And people who are accustomed to dealing with fetishists are probably more accustomed to it. If I meet someone and they're like, I'm a foot fetishist, I want to worship your feet, I don't think they give a fuck about it. I'm not sitting there waiting for them to talk to me and to get to know Mo Williams.
So maybe that's the language that a servant has to use.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the servant has to use the language of fetish, not
I have
the,
a service fetish.
Not the language of kink.
Well,
it's... Sorry, that what I just said is yeah. flawed in terms of language, but...
It's confusing because fetish falls under the category of a kink, right? But yeah. I see what you're saying. Like, in terms of our confederation,
yeah,
I think that possibly people who are looking to provide and or receive service as a servant or as a recipient of that are more closely aligned with people who are looking to have a fetish met.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Not people who are looking to have an engagement.
Not people who are looking for... then the question becomes, is service relationship a little bit misleading? We mean relationship in the meta sense, right? You are relating to another person.
Yes.
But it's not an intimate relationship per se. As in, this is my dominant, this is my, you know, lover, this is my puppy.
Yeah, we would want to be really clear about the difference between saying I am in service to this person and I have a service fetish.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, because the person who has a service fetish or who's looking to perform service doesn't have to be in service to that person. In service, it, to me, strongly implies an ongoing relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would be in service to someone and there would be another aspect to it, right? They would be my dominant, they would be something else. They could be my friend.
Yeah.
In service too.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's an ongoing thing, whereas the servant might just have a one off because that's what they need to do this week. I need to do a shit ton of laundry and walk.
Yep. It could be a one off. It could be ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still about the action and not about the person, and
right.
it is not necessarily long term.
Right.
It is, well, on a basic level, we're talking about something that is task specific,
mm-hmm.
not person specific.
Right, right.
So task specific is service fetish.
Mm-hmm.
Person specific is in service.
Right.
Task specific is service top.
Mm-hmm.
Person specific is my top.
Yes. See, that's fucking awesome. Innovating language and coming up to the end of another half hour slice. So, yeah, dude.
That may have wrapped up the servant question.
I think, yeah.
So we're going to come back next time.
And talk about something else.
Something totally different.
Woo! Holy shit, look at that! solving the world's problems
one at podcast. A fucking time. And once again,
boop, 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 one.